discerninghearts.com, and Spirit Catholic Radio, in cooperation with the Pope Paul VI Institute, presents Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. Dr. Hilgers, after being deeply touched by the teachings of Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae, founded the Pope Paul VI Institute for the Study of Human Reproduction in Omaha, Nebraska. Dr. Hilgers, along with his co-workers, developed the Creighton Model Fertility Care System. He would go on to discover Napro technology. In 1994, Pope John Paul II appointed him to full membership in the Pontifical Academy for Life. And with his wife Susan, Dr. Hilgers serves on the Pontifical Council for the Family. Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. One of those illnesses that can occur, one of those diseases that can occur, is something that takes a lot of women by surprise, especially after anticipating for 9 months the birth of a baby, and then actually giving birth, and then falling into a very, very deep postpartum depression. And it's not something that's really understood very well, is it?
No, it's not understood very well. And I remember in our discussion on premenstrual syndrome, I mentioned the name of Dr. Katarina Dalton. When she was here, she was actually here in Omaha about 20 years ago, and one of my patients was involved in getting her to speak. I think she was speaking at St. Mary's College or someplace. And I was very interested in that. And she said, would you like to meet her? And I said, yeah, I'd love to meet her. And she says, I'll arrange for her to come on over and you can spend a few hours with her. So she did. When I met with her, the first thing on my mind was premenstrual syndrome, because that's what I had read of her material. When she got here, she started talking literally about postpartum depression. And it kind of took me by surprise for a couple reasons. One is, I hardly ever saw postpartum depression in my own practice. That was number one. And number two, I had no idea that she had written on this topic and had promoted the use of progesterone as a treatment for it. So I was quite interested in it. And I learned a lot from just discussing this all with her. But I had never heard of this as a treatment. And like I said, from my point of view, at our own patient population, we didn't see very much of it. Well, as it turns out, we use a lot of progesterone to help support pregnancies, so that women who are pregnant are taking progesterone. And that appears to have the ability to reduce the risk of postpartum depression after the baby's born. So our overall incidence of postpartum depression in our population is only about 2 to 2.5%. And in the normal population, it runs 15 to 30%, depending on what study and how they define it and so forth. So we didn't see it very much, but I got very intrigued by it. And about 2 months after she had been here and went back to England, because she's from England, I had a patient call us probably about 2 months after the baby had been born. And she was informing us that she had been crying all the time, and she was depressed, and she felt like she couldn't take care of the baby, and all of the symptoms that go with postpartum depression. So I told my nurses that we would give her some progesterone and let's see what happens, because it can't do her any harm. We knew that, but maybe it would do some good. And that's the only way we'd ever be able to learn. Again, this is a population of patients, just as a little bit of a background, where they're treated with antidepressants right now. And it may take a year for the antidepressant to work very effectively, and usually it never works very effectively. Maybe 50% they feel better, 75%, but they never feel back to normal. Well, we gave her this shot of progesterone, one shot of progesterone, and the next day, because we had her call the next day, she felt like a whole new person. She couldn't believe the difference. Her old mood elevated. All of these symptoms disappeared literally within 1 or 2 hours after she had received the progesterone shot. So because of that experience, I decided to get involved in a more long-term evaluation of the use of progesterone as a medical treatment for postpartum depression. But since I didn't have a lot of patients in my own practice, we had to make announcements at our American Academy of Fertility Care Professionals meeting and ask our fertility care practitioners if they had any patients with postpartum depression and if they would like to join us in this study. We would be happy to treat them by long distance. We didn't have to see them directly. So really it took us Well, that was about 1988. So from about 1988 to about 1998, about 10 years it took us to collect like 30 patients. And then after that, we've collected quite a few more, and all of a sudden we had the first 30, we had to just find out what it was we were treating, and we asked all these questions about all the different symptoms they were having. And then the next 30 or so patients, we could use that as a benchmark, and we could see if they had these symptoms, and then what happened when they took progesterone and so forth. And we just couldn't believe it. The difference between day and night. The women would tell us after getting a shot of progesterone that it was like a miracle. I mean, it was like the fog just lifted, and it was very quick in its activity. So we were quite certain that this was a treatment that would be very, very helpful in the treatment of postpartum depression.
Oh, how I had wished that you were my obstetrician, because I can identify with postpartum depression because of my first pregnancy. That first month after the birth of my child, it was a normal labor. I was very blessed. It was actually very quick. And we brought our daughter home. And I fell in by the end of the week. It was almost nightmarish because you feel you have this big cloud over you or a big blanket. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women, I think, suffer silently through this 4 weeks, because it was a good 4 weeks of just a depression. It's almost scary because it's hard to control your thoughts.
Yep.
And it's not just from a lack of sleep. I mean, there's something's going on inside your head. And the culture doesn't help because at that time, back in the late 80s, I was watching television shows which were encouraging me, come on, get back on your feet, go to work, drop the baby at daycare. And it's so confusing that I think a lot of times people just think, well, you're just moody because you're tired.
Sure.
But it's so much more than that.
Well, it is. And it's very disturbing because some of the thoughts that you have are, I'm not being a competent mother. I'm not taking care of this baby. It even gets to the point sometimes of wanting to do harm to the baby. And as we know, there have been proven cases of women doing harm to their babies. So it's a very real concern. And they could do harm to themselves. Even suicidal risks are very real. So that's at the more extreme level. It doesn't get to that level very often, but all these other symptoms and signs are very significant and, again, very disruptive to the ongoing everyday taking care of their child, taking care of themselves, and taking care of the family, all the responsibilities that a young mother has. You know, the medical profession responds by giving them Prozac again or some one of the antidepressants, which may make them feel a little bit better, but after a year on Prozac, they're still not really feeling perfectly better. They feel drugged when they take it. So there's just something wrong with that approach. But you can take progesterone. Progesterone at almost any dose you can take. It's safe to take. It works very quickly. We do use it in an injectable form for this because you get the highest blood levels, get the quickest response. And that's why within literally an hour or two after giving it, you get this kind of positive response to it. But you can take progesterone for several weeks if you have to, or even several months. The longest we've ever had to treat anybody was about maybe 10 weeks. Now, 10 weeks versus a year.
Sure.
You keep that in perspective. But most of the time, some of it's just one shot of progesterone. Sometimes it's a series of 5 shots, which takes about 10 days. Sometimes we have to repeat the series a second time. But most of the time, everything's taken care of by them. And it's miraculous. I mean, it truly is. It's just one of the most incredibly neat things to do as a physician to be able to see such a positive response.
And a woman who suffers from postpartum depression, it can affect her ability to think of having another child because it is such a traumatic experience to go through.
Well, actually, a lot of decisions are made during this period of time not to have more children. Or, I hate to say it, but some women make a decision, if I ever get pregnant again, I'm going to abort that next pregnancy because of this. So this is a very serious problem in a lot of different ways. And again, here we got the medical profession saying it doesn't work, even though the first reported case of progesterone therapy for postpartum depression was in the mid-1950s in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology. And yet, it's another one of those things that's been completely ignored. Progesterone, for some reason, they can't. But here's what irritates me, I guess, is that there are people who say it works, people with experience who say that it's effective, and their response is simply to say it doesn't work, rather than saying, well, I wonder maybe if they don't have something to this. I mean, what harm could it do to give somebody progesterone who's in the throes of a postpartum depression? Maybe it'll work. Maybe we'll see. We'll give it a try. At least be open-minded enough to give it a trial. But that's not the response they get. We had one of our doctors who came to us, an obstetrician gynecologist, who went back home to his practice. He had 23 or 24 patients in a row that he treated with postpartum depression with progesterone, and every one of them got better.
Wow.
And then his partners in his medical practice said he had to stop using this treatment. And the reason given was the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology doesn't approve of this treatment. It's not an approved treatment. So if we continue to do this, we're putting ourselves at risk. They were thinking liability risk in terms of malpractice suits and so forth. So because he was only one of, I think, five or six people in the practice, he was forced to discontinue the treatment. But all these women that he helped, they're not being helped anymore because of that.
And postpartum depression occurs not only in women who have delivered healthy babies. Unfortunately, postpartum depression occurs in other cases as well.
Yeah, women who've had miscarriages, women who've had tubal pregnancies, women who've had abortions, all can have postpartum depression or the same symptoms of postpartum depression. And interestingly enough, many of these women who suffer from postpartum depression also have a pre-existing history of premenstrual syndrome. There's a connection here in terms of the hormonal links, and the same group of people can use progesterone. Now, in the postpartum time period, the women usually aren't in cycles. Many of them may be nursing their babies. So you can give progesterone at any time. It's not a timed problem, so any obstetrician really can do this. And the nursing breast has no progesterone receptors, so giving progesterone has no effect on the milk supply. It has no effect on breastfeeding at all, so you can use it under those circumstances as well. So it's a really great treatment, and one that I wish we could get more and more people to look at seriously, because it's actually a pretty common problem to have some of these difficulties after having a baby. And it, again, it doesn't have to be that way.
It is going to be a period where you will naturally feel some fatigue, because giving birth to a baby is an exhausting experience, and your body adjusting to all those different levels. I mean, you will be tired, but there's something different. A woman who has postpartum depression, I've experienced it in one pregnancy, I did not experience in the two others, but it is debilitating. And so often husbands are not sure, spouses are not sure what to do. They don't know if they can do anything.
Well,
and it's hard for the other children if it occurs after the birth of other babies.
Well, they do. They feel very helpless, and they don't know where to turn even. So it's really a sad situation when the appropriate help is not made available to these patients.
You mentioned that women who are nursing, that the progesterone does not transfer through the breast milk into the baby. Can that be said for the antidepressants that are prescribed for this?
What I said was is that the progesterone, there are no progesterone receptors in the breast, so taking progesterone does not affect the milk supply.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if progesterone is transferred through the breast milk. It may very well be. But keep in mind that the baby is literally floating in progesterone all through the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
The blood levels of progesterone in the baby while in the uterus are 7 times what the blood levels are in the maternal serum in the mother's blood. So the babies are exposed to progesterone all through pregnancy at very high levels. So some progesterone postpartum would be of no abnormality or cause no difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to Prozac and the other antidepressants, those are transferred, many of them, through the milk supply. And, of course, they will have an effect on the baby's mentation and function of their brains while they're taking these medications.
I wonder if women realize that when they are given this.
Well, I suspect they're told to stop breastfeeding.
Oh, dear.
Although I may not be correct on that because I really have no experience, but I know that in other cases that's what they'll do. And of course, that's not necessarily the best solution either.
How can NAPRO technology assist in the treatment of postpartum depression?
Well, actually, where NAPRO technology fits in comes in the treatment of premenstrual syndrome, because we were using natural progesterone in the treatment of premenstrual syndrome and having success with it. So then when we heard about the use of progesterone for a similar set of symptoms, But during the postpartum period of time, we were open-minded to the idea that progesterone might be of some help. So that's the only connection. Most of the time, these women are not in cycles, so there's no charting that's necessary. You just have to administer the progesterone. Now, once in a while, we get a call, you know, like at 12 months after the baby's born and their cycles have resumed. Those patients have to start charting and they have to get their hormone levels drawn because they are suffering from premenstrual syndrome, even though it's 12 months later and it might be thought of as postpartum depression. It's really just a premenstrual syndrome exacerbation, and we have to get a handle on that so we can give them cooperative treatment.
With, again, the common approaches that are offered women who are suffering for postpartum, psychotherapy is one of those instances. But Dr. Hildreth, in that first 4 weeks after just having a baby, the idea of signing up and waiting to get into somebody's office to have some psychotherapy done doesn't seem really practical.
Well, if you got a spare 6 to 12 months to spend on it,
exactly,
psychotherapy might be of some value. But generally speaking, psychotherapy is not going to be certainly not of any immediate help. And this is a chemical imbalance of some sort that is corrected by progesterone. And we don't know what all of the abnormalities are in terms of the reason why progesterone works. We do know that progesterone has what are called anxiolytic properties, which it means that it calms anxiety, for example. It also has antidepressant properties. And in women who have postpartum depression, they generally have higher progesterone levels during their pregnancy. So when the baby's born and the placenta is removed, the progesterone levels go way, way down precipitously within 24 hours. It appears to be that a dramatic, abrupt drop in progesterone that somehow stimulates the occurrence of these events. And within the week after that, these symptoms will begin to develop. The earlier that you find out about these symptoms, in other words, the earlier the woman contacts our office with these symptoms, the more successful we will be. And there are, in terms of progesterone therapy now, we've treated hundreds of cases, and our success rate's in the 95% range. We're never 100% successful in these conditions because underlying all of this may actually be a real depression. In other words, a depression caused by some totally separate biochemical abnormality, the timing of which might somehow be premenstrual or somehow might be postpartum. So those people, you know, we're grateful we do have antidepressant medication for them because it will help. It's it's not always the greatest treatment either, but it's better than nothing, and it does help quite a bit. But in terms of the hormonal deficiencies, most of these are hormonal deficiencies, and so they should be treated with hormonal therapies, particularly in this case, progesterone.
When someone has had a baby and they are nursing, does nursing hormonally affect the woman at all? I mean, is there something in nursing?
Yeah, breastfeeding the baby produces a hormone called prolactin, which is one of the milk-producing hormones. And as that level goes up, actually goes up and down with the nursing, it has a feedback ability to inhibit the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland, which are the two glands that produce the follicle-stimulating hormone. So in breastfeeding, ovulation and fertility, for that matter, will be delayed. Mm-hmm. It will be suppressed for a period of time, naturally suppressed because of the breastfeeding. The degree to which there is suppression will depend upon the individual woman, because everybody's a little bit different, how much nursing they're doing, whether it's total nursing or partially nursing or whatever. But it will suppress those hormones, and it will suppress ovulation for a period of time.
It is such an important thing that if a mother can participate in breastfeeding. But again, if you are experiencing postpartum depression, it can make nursing very difficult because in the first attempts, at least from my experience, it's those first couple weeks that you got to really work at it to be successful at it from not only that baby, but successive babies.
Well, that's right. And of course, if you're not successful like right away, it becomes frustrating because you're concerned about the baby's nourishment. Baby's not getting enough food, not going to grow, and all of the things that flow from that. And, of course, if you're the one giving the baby, you know, 100% of his or her sustenance, that's a pretty big responsibility. The last thing a new mother wants to do is starve their baby to death, you know.
That's right.
And that's a reality in thinking, you know, because they may think that's what's happening. Maybe it isn't actually what's happening, but that's sometimes, I mean, you don't have a way of measuring it, so. So it makes it more difficult. But again, you could use progesterone and continue nursing. That's actually one of the beauties of it, because it doesn't cause problems with nursing. It doesn't dry up the breast milk. It doesn't do any of that sort of thing, and it's very helpful.
And your experience has been that you can see a successful turnaround in almost all cases immediately. I mean, within 24 hours?
It's very quick. And if it's not within 24 hours, it'll be within the first 2 or 3 days. And you can then go ahead and continue the treatment for as long as you really need to. And again, as I said, the longest we've ever had to treat anybody was about 10 or 12 weeks probably.
This really does seem to be fertility care. It's not only in the assistance in helping someone conceive a child and to be able to have a successful pregnancy, but caring for the woman from postpartum depression or other occurrences that might happen. It's a total care package, isn't it?
Well, it is. We think of NAPRO technology as sort of periconceptional medicine. In other words, medicine that takes place prior to the time of conception, during the time of conception, and after the time of conception until after the baby's born. So there's that. It's an area of medicine which right now is very compartmentalized. And you have reproductive endocrinologists that take care of people before they get pregnant, and then they get rid of them once they're pregnant. You have the maternal fetal medicine doctors who usually don't see a pregnant woman until she's 20 or 25 weeks of pregnancy. So the first 20 weeks are kind of lost. Now, I'm not saying that's 100%, but a lot of times that's the case. And then in NAPRO technology, we're seeing and connecting all the dots with all the different care. And it makes a lot of sense if you just think even simplistically about it. It seems to me that that's the way medicine should be going in this area. Rather than doing all of the regimentation and compartmentalization of it.
It seems, if you'll forgive me, it just seems as though it is how God has set things up. He gives us a cycle of life. In everything from nature to how the universe works, there's a cycle for everything. And in his creation of our bodies, in particular the female body, which is the nurturing body that helps bring more humans in the world, that to cooperate with that cycle, to learn what that is instead of fighting against it or treating it as a hostile event. The work of the Pope Paul VI Institute really honors that.
Well, we would sort of think that is correct, but if you look at obstetrics and gynecology as a whole, there is a paper written in the mid-1970s which was entitled Unwanted Pregnancy, the Second Most Common Venereal Disease. And that gives you an idea of the mindset of many in the field of obstetrics, gynecology, and reproductive medicine, because they buy into this sort of imagery. And on the surface, it all sounds cutesy and like it's right and all this sort of stuff, but it really conveys a very negative image, a very negative concept with regard to the cycles of life, just like you're talking about. If you get to the question of how many women in the world, any place, wherever you want to go, even in Omaha, Nebraska, have a good concept, an understanding of the menstrual and the fertility cycle, you can count them. You can't not like you can count them on one hand, but you can mm-hmm. count them on not very many hands. It's a very small percentage of women who don't have a good handle on all of these events that occur during the course of their cycles, that are missing out on all of the information that could provide to them in terms of their own health. And that's because the medical profession as a whole, I think, has failed them and in certain areas. And they continue to make fun of, ridicule, take pot shots at, however you want to phrase it, mm-hmm. People involved in a natural method of family planning. They just don't think people can do this. It's just not possible. First of all, we can't control our urges. Second of all, women won't do this because it's too much work, or they've got more excuses than, like I tell my kids, Carter's got liver pills, and they never heard of Carter's little liver pills. So,
sir, once again, it is taking a look at the creation that God has given us in our bodies and working with it instead of trying to alter it or work against it. I mean, there may be some diseases that have set in, or there's some maladies that are affecting us. And it's one thing to treat that, to cure those illnesses. It's another thing to work against them or to mask them.
You see, up until 1960, there was kind of an attempt to do just that. But as soon as the 1960s came, that was the birth control pill era, it all changed. And so we have oral contraceptives, then abortion, and then in vitro fertilization, three areas that have changed the practice of reproductive medicine to an artificial compartmentalization of our management, our identification of problems, and so forth. Everything is managed by suppression or destruction. And then we come along and we're teaching women about their fertility and their menstrual cycles in a way which they can track them. We find that the tracking system gives biological markers back to us that are meaningful because we've studied them now. It's an area of research that has gone completely unnoticed or completely, it's like they don't even care about the research, you know. It's like ignorance of bliss, I guess. I'm not sure what it is, but they have ignored the studies that have been published. They don't get anybody's attention because they're not interested. And what that says to me is that here's a gynecologist who's fundamentally not interested in how a woman's body works and functions. And how can you practice that profession? How can you be that sort of a specialist with such an overall negative view towards the very target population that you're trying to work with and study and help?
Well, it certainly, the work that the Pope Paul VI Institute is pioneering is true fertility care from every aspect in which the woman would experience that whole giftedness that God has given us in our sexuality. And I think that in itself really honors what Humanae Vitae has called us to do in looking for not only for females, but also for males.
Yeah.
And that whole gift of the family and allowing God to be at the center of all that.
Yeah. Well, and it's the church's teaching that has guided us in all of this. It's the philosophical insights of the Catholic Church that has guided us into these areas. And, of course, as soon as you say that, then you've got a whole group of people who are naysayers, who don't believe that faith and science have the right to be in the same sentence together even. And to me, that indicates they don't understand faith and they don't understand science either.
It's not the first time, and it won't be the last.
No.
But we appreciate all the work that you do, Dr. Thomas Helgers, and especially you and your staff at the Pope Paul VI Institute, and all those who are trying to educate and reach out across the country as well as around the world.
Great. Thank you, Chris.
You've been listening to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Helgers. To hear and or to download this episode, along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. To learn more about the work of Dr. Helgers and the Pope Paul VI Institute, go to popepaulvi.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com, Spirit Catholic Radio, and the Pope Paul VI Institute. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Helgers.